Welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. I am John, and over there is Jeff.
Yeah, I'm not really feeling it. I'll be like kind of half-assed on this one. I'm going to go ahead and tell you now, John, just so you don't get your hopes up.
Good, that's fine. That is okay. Because we watch the movies that you recommend, and you recommended Theodore Rex.
Yeah, I hope you guys recommended that I check my cell phone, because here we go.
I'm going to tell you what was going on with my cell phone for a good hour and a half. Well, first of all, I hit that Twitter app.
Dug right into that tweets.
Theodore Rex is a film from 1995 with Whoopi Goldberg and one of the costumes from the Dinosaurs TV show.
Like it's maybe someone's journeyman attempt to become a dinosaur from the Dinosaur TV show costume. It's a lot cheaper and shittier.
It's amazing to me that I can agree with that, given that, man, that Dinosaurs TV show, you go back and look at it now and you're like, ooh, that's rough.
Yeah, but their eyes don't break in the middle of scenes and then they just keep going. I mean, that happened in this movie.
Oh, man. There's a lot to be said about the absolute shitty dinosaur costume stuff in this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a buddy cop film where Whoopi Goldberg is the no-nonsense, gruff, by-the-book type, and Theodore Rex is the fun-loving dinosaur, fresh, on detective duty cop, and they're...
It's real hard to tell if he's like an actual cop or what the fucking deal is with him. There's a point where someone says he's like the community liaison to dinosaurs officer or something, so he doesn't count as a real cop.
Yeah, from what I gathered in the movie, he did go through the academy, but his official role on the police force is to just be like human dinosaur relations. He's like the C-3PO of the
Wait,
police force.
Is there a chance he's the Captain America of this movie? Like Captain America, the First Avenger, where he gets all the super soldier powers and then they just make him do USO shows for a couple of years.
Yeah, that is exactly like this. Guys, if you liked Captain America, the First Avenger, you're going to love Theodore Rex.
Yeah, they're the same movie.
It's literally the same movie.
I just realized this.
I can't believe that Marvel didn't get sued for this.
It's true. I'm sure the people who made this movie are deeply litigious in defense of it.
Oh, sure. They're like, look, I know everything about Theodore Rex, and if you try and infringe upon our mental copyright here.
Spoiler alert, but I did hear that they sued the singers of that Christmas song about how everyone loves the man in the bag.
What?
Yeah, you know that song. It's one of those dumb Santa songs you only hear around Christmas time and then promptly forget. It's like, everybody's loving because the talking about the man in the bag because Santa Claus comes tonight. You haven't heard that?
No.
It's one of the, you know, it's one of those jazzy numbers that people think counts as a Christmas music song, but fuck it if it does. The only things that count as Christmas music are, what, the stuff from Peanuts, songs that are over 100 years old, Mannheim Steamroller, and I don't know. What else, John? You got anything else?
And Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, Feliz Navidad. I'd also say Shaken Stevens counts.
I would also say Mele Kalikimaka.
Oh, dude, yeah. Mele Kalikimaka is a great one because it doesn't have any of the traditions of Christmas in it.
Exactly.
It's just a big, long Hawaiian word that sounds rad.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm a big fan, yeah. Also, Christmas shoes because, you know, I'm going full to bat in defense of Christmas shoes on this episode of System or Movie Mastery that we're recording in March.
That's right. It's finally time for you to take a stand here when it matters most.
Yeah, in this March review of a non-Christmas related movie, I'm putting a foot down
right into these Christmas shoes. Guys, we'll be right back after the music with more about Theodore Rex and probably Christmas shoes.
I said I'm half-assing it. You've already gotten all my jokes.
And Theodore Rex.
I must still do a Luigi impressions.
Yeah, during the break, Jeff decided he was going to give Luigi a dumb name, and now he's a stripper?
Yeah, Luigi Borgioni, owner of the Bubble Lounge, my own strip restaurant.
So Theodore Rex, I'm not even going to dignify your dumb bullshit.
Fair enough. Although that's as animated as I'm going to get.
Yeah, that's it. That's the hypest you will be.
So Theodore Rex. Theodore Rex opens with a crawl that explains the villain's entire plan.
I fucking love it. Because, like, we start the movie, and Jeff, like, gets up to go get something from the kitchen. I'm like, Jeff, you're missing, like, literally the whole plot because it's just displaying it.
Yeah, it just put it up on screen in two paragraphs read by almost James Earl Jones, but technically not. Like, for legal reasons, we cannot identify this person as James Earl Jones.
Yeah, it's just someone doing their best James Earl Jones impression and being like, hey, the year is late 2000s and some guy's got dinosaurs. Anyway, he wants to put the world in an ice age and have two of every animal then afterwards. I don't know why he wants to be new Noah, but whatever.
Oh, it's just one of the standard starting supervillain packages.
Yeah.
Yeah, would you like to be the new Noah and flood the earth in an ice age? Would you like to blow up the ocean?
I would.
They're pretty basic. Steal every baby.
Ooh, steal every baby.
Steal every baby. Yeah, that's a pretty common one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So yeah, he wants to blow up the moon or whatever and do the new Noah thing with a satellite that'll ice the planet somehow.
Now, the weird thing to me is we start getting introduced to this world, and it's definitely, like, we get background information like, oh, this company has brought back elephants and now raccoons, so it's supposed to be like, oh yeah, we've caused a lot of things to go extinct.
Yeah, lots of common things are extinct, including things that wouldn't go extinct early, like raccoons.
Yeah.
Raccoons are here for the long haul because they've adapted to live in cities. Elephants kind of make some sense.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few of the ones where they're like, oh, we brought whatever back, and I'm like, okay, I could see in the future we fucked up and those are gone, but yeah. No, it'd be like, hey, we had to clone rats because those died out. No, they didn't.
No, they're going to outlive us. But the actual opening scene in this movie, for some reason, I guess for artistic purposes, is all Schindler's List, where it's all black and white with like one color element. And a lonely T-Rex is sweeping up in what looks like some kind of jungle laboratory. When an assassin who looks like the bad guy from the first Crow movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I was trying to think of when I was watching the movie was it kind of looks like Michael Bolton in a bad wig.
I can see that. But also he has like weird ears. Like he has long hair the entire movie, so you can only see his weird ears when he like sweeps his head back and forth. And then you see that he has like bladed ears.
I feel like there was a lot going on that we didn't get into.
I feel like the movie threw even more spaghetti at the walls, and we're just seeing the stuff that they thought stuck.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, you've got this guy, you've got his henchmen, which...
Who are called toads?
There's fucking Bud Cort.
Bud Cort, yeah.
And his courtroom are the best band.
It's just madness, but this random trench coat wearing, you know, long straight black hair covering up his knifey elf ears, but otherwise he looks exactly like the bad guy from the first Crow movie, shows up and releases a butterfly, which is the only color thing in an artsy black and white scene, that flies over and kills a puppet T-Rex.
Yeah, it lands on the T-Rex's face and explodes.
Yes, and that's the beginning. And after that, we cut to our hero, Teddy Rex.
Yeah, it turns out that black and white scene was a dream he was having. And
yeah.
Because this world also establishes that fucking dinosaurs have a psychic link.
Yeah, all dinosaurs have a psychic link connecting each other. They never get into why they brought back elephants and raccoons and junk, but when they brought back dinosaurs, they came back, like, vegetarian, intelligent, and desiring of clothing?
Yeah.
That's just never addressed.
I want to know why that this guy was like, okay, I'm going to bring back something. I'm going to clone dinosaurs. That's rad. However, this is coming out like 3 years after Jurassic Park did. So I've learned my lesson.
1 year.
We're not going to put actual for realsies dinosaurs out there.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to do is make Barney level dinosaurs.
Yeah, just crappy little dinosaurs. Teddy Rex. So he wakes up out of bed and he starts going through his daily routine and he is doing bargain basement, you know, nonstop talking to himself, Rodney Dangerfield style comedy in here. And he's like, okay. Well, he doesn't talk like that at all. He more just sort of has a generic normal guy voice, but he keeps trying to do impressions.
That is also a thing that keeps happening through this movie where I guess the actor was like, hey, let me do some voices. And they're like, you are terrible at them, but let me do them.
It's George Newbern, who is a relatively well-respected actor and voice actor from around the 80s and 90s. But it's trash here.
Oh, it's weird.
Yeah. And he's just sort of going through the motions of, okay, now I got to pick out a shirt. All right, a shirt, a shirt, a shirt. Here we go. I'm going to pick out this shirt because I think it makes me look good.
Ooh, and time to shave. Nope, don't have any hair on my face. Never do. Okay, here we go.
Okay, let's get in the shower. Oh, I'm a shower and I'm a shower and I'm a rub-a-dub-dub. And you're like, dude, okay, I get it. You don't need to narrate your morning routine. So that we figured out you can talk and you wear clothes already. We're up to speed.
We get it. You're a dinosaur that is basically a dude.
I love my dog. Watch him do a trick. There he goes. Okay, got to get to work. Here we go.
Ooh, cookies. Cookies, cookies, cookies.
Oh, yeah, he loves cookies, and that'll come up several times throughout the course of the film.
That is a defining trait of Theodore Rex. Loves cookies.
The other thing, Theodore Rex is a T-Rex, and, you know, in the dinosaur show, most of the dinosaurs didn't really look like their dinosaur of choice, but they did do the T-Rex thing here where they gave him the elongated snout and the long tail and all that,
yeah.
And where he's leaned way forward. And it's amusing because what they had to do with his little claw arms is they have him holding them together in his, like, lap all the time. He looks like those pictures of baby pangolins. Like at any given time, he's going to, oh, excuse me, sir, may I add another coal to the fire? It's so frightfully cold.
And that long tail thing is going to also be just the worst running gag through this of like, oh, can't control my tail. If I turn anywhere, it knocks things over.
It's two different running gags, and the two of them run counter to each other, and it's really annoying. Because on the one hand, his tail just smacks things around and knocks them over all the time, even though he lives in a world where there are lots of T-Rexes.
Yeah, well,
so you'd think that they'd be built around this sort of idiocy.
Nah, man, they're fairly recent-ish.
Yeah. But the other thing is that anytime they draw attention to his tail, he's some sort of weird master of it.
Oh, yeah, because in, like, the same scene, he'll show up somewhere and, like, walk around and knock over, like, little end tables and things and be like, oh, sorry, whoop, and then, like, trip a dude and he falls over, but then also go, oh, I need to get a guy's attention, and he'll, like, tap him on the shoulder with his tail.
I like that one shot where he's in the frame on the left, stage left of the guy he needs to distract, and then from stage right of a 10-foot wide shot, approaches the tip of his tail and pokes this guy, and I'm like, what the fuck? Is it coming around behind the camera? What are we doing here?
Yep.
Did he hire another T-Rex to do this? And that's just the kind of bullshit camera trickery that's going to look stupid and distract you all the way through this bullshit film. Not like you needed distracting, because this is nonsensical and slow.
Yeah, he, after getting ready for his day by getting dressed in, I don't know, the shittiest outfit possible and eating a cookie, he's going to go check on that thing he had a dream about.
He's wearing an orange hoodie and blue slacks and stuff. He looks like if they took the dog from a sitcom and made a cartoon about it. If they were like, all right, Punky Brewster's dog, you're going to star in your own cartoon.
Wow.
That's what he looks like. He really does. He heads off. Oh, no. Here's what happens. He wakes up in the morning, scared from the dream, and immediately calls a police station. And he says, hi, this is Teddy Rex. I'm tactically a police officer. Is anything weird happening? I got a bad feeling. And they're like, yeah, there was definitely like a weird murder downtown today. It was a dinosaur.
And it's the first time a dinosaur has ever been killed.
Anyway, no one seems to care, though. And he's like, I'm on it. And they're like, no. No, you're not. You haven't been assigned to that case.
Hey, you know, we're not dispatching you to that, so nope.
Please don't say you're on it. That's not the way this works.
you actually get jobs from us. You don't just call in and ask to do a thing.
But what happens is he does take that to heart, because his first destination isn't the crime scene. It's a party where the police commissioner is. And just like everything else in this movie, apparently once they brought dinosaurs back, everyone got obsessed with archaeology.
See, I think you have this backwards. He went to the thing and then went there to ask if he could do it.
No, because when he goes back with help. He has Whoopi with him at that point.
The first time he goes, he asks that one cop who's there.
God, who cares, John? Who gives one fuck?
Hey, you're the one who wants to do this scene by scene. If you want to do it chronologically, then by God, we will do it chronologically.
All right, fine. We're doing it chronologically.
You piece of shit.
We're both crossing our arms right now.
You fuck.
This is the first time I've actually been engaged in the process of making this episode
since
I've been shut down brutally about making my fun Luigi jokes.
Yeah, man, if I can't get you engaged and happy, then I'll get you engaged and angry.
So he fucking goes to the crime scene and sees a dead dinosaur, and he's like, oh, I knew of this guy because all Rexes know each other. And then he's like, I know how I'll get on this case. I'll go bother the police commissioner at the archaeological policeman commissioner ball thing. That's definitely a fucking thing that's happening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... held by our main villain is the guy who's in charge of, like, New Genesis?
Uh-huh. And if you want to see a dude who whispers with a bad French accent, he's your man. If you want to never understand a word a character in a movie has ever said, he's the guy.
I absolutely love it because he's completely unintelligible for half of his lines.
Mm-hmm.
And with him is Juliet Landau, who you might know as Drusilla from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Uh-huh.
And the movie decides to really focus in on making fun of her accent instead.
Yeah, well, only insofar as there's one time where Whoopi Goldberg does her accent.
Oh, no. And so Teddy makes fun of her and does it on, like, multiple occasions.
But this other guy, he's like, oh, hello. Welcome to New Genesis. I am the bad guy. He just sounds like Senior Card Gage. and at no point does anyone go like, hey, I'm sorry, what did you say? Except for people who are watching the film.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, welcome to the bush, Melista. Would you like a free bag of minivans?
Yeah.
And they're like, what? What the fuck did he just offer me a bag of minivans?
Sever your leg, please, sir. It's the greatest day.
Just what? So he's completely unintelligible. And it feels like they added Drusilla to the movie just to say shit when this guy can't.
Yeah, because, you know, at least she is concise and clear and you can tell what she is saying.
Yeah, she's speaking with what I think is her real accent.
Yeah.
Her British accent. So she has a sort of that clipped London British accent and is very decipherable. But when they meet her, they're like, ooh, hello. Could I please see the Queen indeed?
I can't believe that's what we're going to be doing now.
Time for tea, what? And they're like, what? How come you're not making fun of that weird French whisper man?
Because we can't do his voice.
No one can. So basically, Teddy gets into this archaeological policeman's ball by showing his badge, and then he starts swinging his tail around and being a big idiot and running afoul of various goons of the bad guy.
Well, I mean, of course he has to run afoul of snooty waiter man, because that's what happens when you get into one of these balls.
Yeah, but there's also, I don't even remember who this guy, the bad guy has a random goon who's like connected to the police department. He was the blonde guy with the glasses.
Yeah, no, he's one of the policemen who is under his, like, thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, oh, hey, Commissioner, you should definitely put Theodore Rex on this case, because that'll be great PR for the department if a dinosaur solves a dino crime.
Yeah, but it turns out that he's in the pocket of Big Whisper Frenchman, because his whole idea is, I'll put the worst possible cop on this case, and then no one will solve it.
Yeah.
So he talks the police commissioner into giving Teddy the job. Meanwhile, Teddy is saying, cookies, 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 cookies! Oh, cookies, 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 cookies! For, what do you want to say, John, half an hour?
I mean, at least about a good 3-4 days.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. While he packs his shirt and pockets and hat with cookies. Because he loves cookies, you see, and he would like cookies.
You see, he's crazy for cookies.
Yeah, now, in English we say he's cookie crazy, but I like to think more in the German sense, that in which he is seeking of cookies, which, because that way it's less about his debilitation and more about the object of his interest. It helps to humanize this dinosaur character with his cookin' schmerz.
Good.
Thank you, yeah. He is desirous of cookies.
Yes, he very much is.
Now, meanwhile, we cut to Whoopi Goldberg wearing an outfit that is very clearly uncomfortably tight.
Yeah, the weird thing for me is the style for her and most of the police department feels very much like they were going for a Judge Dredd thing. And you get that as well in the feel of the city itself. Whenever you get shots, it's supposed to look kind of grimy, kind of run down. We have the whole, you know, back plot of all of these species going extinct. So it's supposed to kind of be reminiscent of that, like, Judge Dredd-esque future.
Uh-huh. So right down to the point where she's wearing a black rubber bodysuit that has black Lilu from the Fifth Element straps over it. And she just looks, like, visibly uncomfortable. Like, anytime you have to watch Whoopi Goldberg walk in this movie, she's walking like she's pregnant because of how much she's being forced into waddling by this outfit.
Yeah, it is just an outfit that makes no sense anyone.
It looks like it's a medically prescribed thing for posture correction. She's just like, yes, I am quite stiff and uncomfortable. You are under arrest. She has a partner that she's talking to, and the two of them are getting ready to witness and then intercept some sort of crime.
Yeah, and she is just fresh back onto the force because she was taken off to get some of her mods tweaked, which we also find out that this is a future where, in addition to cloning, we've got, like, weird bio mods.
Uh-huh. So
that never comes up for the point where they're like, oh, oh, what do you have?
Yeah,
they never
talk about it.
Oh, I've got like an enhanced vision mod or a reflexes mod or anything. They just say that she has them.
The closest we get is in the climax of the film when she gets shot. She doesn't like fall down dead. She just starts sparking and stands there while her system repairs itself.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I'm fine, but I got shot right in the mods.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how that works.
That's the closest we get. Otherwise, we do identify that her type of wetware that she has installed has made her what everyone calls a gun.
Yeah, which is weird because very frequently she will let everyone know that she is not a gun.
Yeah, she is not a gun, even though, as she consistently points out to people, the gun is good.
Yeah.
It's weird that she does both of those movies.
It's weird that all of these show up.
Uh-huh. And then at certain points, she offers to teach people the way of the gun, which is, it's really confusing.
Which is odd, because that came out, like, some years later, I think?
Yeah, but it's weird that she seems highly prescient of it. At one point, she offers to fuckstart someone's head. And there it is, the only line from The Way of the Gun.
There you are. That's it.
Someone's going to write in and tell me that's not from The Way of the Gun, and I'll be sad.
Yep, you will be.
It's okay, folks. You can't hurt me. I'm already pretty sad. I watched Theodore Rex. So go ahead.
They are on a stakeout, apparently, to get someone, but instead they find a rollerblading cyborg that is being chased down by
a semi-truck.
Trash golems with green eyes in a, trash truck.
Uh-huh. So basically, we have a sort of generic villain for the henchmen, for the villains of the movie, which are these dudes who kind of look like Rastafarian trash ghosts.
It's like if you took the that sort of bush camo,
mm-hmm,
and then made them all wear like just leotards and night vision goggles.
They all look like if you were at a haunted house of the Sea World and you found the ghost who was drowned in fishnets.
Yeah,
and they just look ridiculous, except for their leader,
except for their legs, which look amazing in those fishnets.
Their leader is Bud Cort.
Bud Cort, the only one that you can see the face of.
And boy, do you ever wish you couldn't, because, you know, even in his best days, Bud Cort kind of looks like an Ugnaught.
It is amazing to me how much that they were like, oh, we need to save money on, we would have to pay more if we put an actor's face on screen.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to pay more if we used an actor's voice to do a line. So all of the henchmen that aren't Bud Cort just go,
and they are laughing all the time. They're like, hee hee, woohoo, woohoo, ha ha, all the time, like fucking Mickey getting blown. But the thing is, that's the only noise they make, and it's just played on sampled loops. So even when they're getting beat up or chased or whatever, they're just doing that.
Yeah, it's just weird gremlin noises in the background of just.
Exactly. It's just, he's right. It just sounds like random gremlins doing random gremlin things. But Bud Cort can speak in a high-pitched...
Well, I mean, as much as Bud Cort can speak.
Bud Cort kind of sounds like he's trying to do a lich voice in a D&D game or something. So he's just sort of, yes, hi, I definitely caught your villain. I'm not doing that right, am I?
No, I don't know.
It's a weird voice. He does a very squeaky, high-pitched thing. He has one eye, and they didn't have the money to paint him green. So instead, anytime Bud Cort's on screen, they light him green.
Oh, yeah. They're like, look, we're going to save on so much body paint by just having a green filter on any light that you appear under.
Which is amusing because it means that anytime he's on screen with someone, they are also lit green.
Yes.
It's almost like he just emits green light.
It is a very weird choice.
It's a bizarre choice. Anyway, they kidnap this random rollerblader dude, and that's enough evidence for Whoopi Goldberg. Otherwise, oh gosh, what's her character's name? She says it constantly.
Yeah, it's Katie Coltrane.
For her and her police partner to go after the truck, which they do by doing that I'm going to fire a grappling thing so I can swing down near the truck routine.
Yeah.
And then they sort of fall into the truck and get in fights. And the
worst is when fucking Whoopi drops into the back of this truck where there are this guy that they kidnapped and a bunch of these henchmen. She decides that what she's going to do is shtick for 5 minutes first.
Uh-huh. She's all like, oh, look, it's you, Spinner. I haven't seen you in a while. And it's like, no, just start arresting them. What are you doing?
Hey, guys, I thought we'd have some fun times. You know, I got a gun. It looks like you guys got guns. We all got guns. We're friends here. I'm like, just stop. Stop, just, Whoopi.
What are you doing?
No one needs you to shtick right now.
Meanwhile, the partner has come to the cab of the truck where a giant woman is punching him. And you only see her for like 2 seconds at a time, but she gets three different credits in this movie. Because she is on the crew in some capacity. She's credited as the truck driver, and she's also credited as a stunt double.
Great.
So that was pretty impressive. But she she sort of punches him off the truck. And then Bud Cort, playing, again, Spinner, the Toad, basically flips a table and everyone starts shooting at each other. And it all ends with Whoopi Goldberg getting shoved out of the back of the truck on a table, which she surfs to safety.
Yeah, and they get the guy, though he is already dead.
Yeah, they manage to rescue the dead guy. The truck crashes and bursts into flames, but the Spinner Toads and all that get away.
Yeah.
So that's what that's going on about. Meanwhile, back at the archaeological super party museum for cops time, they give Teddy the assignment of, you're going to go after the killer of that T-Rex you know about, and we're assigning you a partner, Katie Coltrane.
Yeah, and Katie
is
racist against dinosaurs. That's her thing. Boy, she's so dino racist.
And you know what? I'm going to be clear here. So am I, having seen this movie. Fuck dinosaurs.
I mean, not dinosaurs. Fuck these dinosaurs.
Yeah, just these dinosaurs in particular. Just any dinosaur in this film.
I mean, I would have to imagine it would be the same if it happened now. If someone was like, guys, we cloned dinosaurs. And you're a big fan of dinosaurs.
I am.
You love dinosaurs. They're like, look, we cloned them. However, we turned them into chumpy schmucks over here. Look, he's wearing big sneakers.
Oh, goodness.
I hate him. Cookies.
He loves cookies. Oh my gosh, how many different action movie impressions is he going to do?
Oh, at least six.
Oh, he'll never stop doing those. No, we built that into his DNA matrix. He thinks he's Arnold.
Don't worry, we mixed a little Robin Williams in with him, so he won't stop. He'll just do this.
Oh, and also, any of the ones that aren't T-Rexes are completely unrecognizable. They're just generic monsters of no particular description.
Yeah, I think I saw one that was like, you're basically a Triceratops?
There's definitely one that's a Monoceratops, and I'm pretty sure there's a Styracosaur, but also there's one that's just a tooth monster.
Oh yeah, I loved Tooth Monster.
Yeah,
the one that was just like, what are you? I'm basically like an anglerfish mixed with a small lizard.
It's not like they give him any dialogue. He just kind of goes, which incidentally is the reason that most people are right to hate dinosaurs in this movie, because in order to make sure that people know they're dinosaurs and to think they're funny, they just constantly make noise.
Well, yeah, because you can't have anyone actually say words, because then you have to pay that actor.
Yeah.
Which means you have a scene where fucking the two of them go to a dino bar, and there's a dino who's into humans.
Yeah, the Monoceratops.
And instead of him being like, hey, baby, what's up? He just sits in a corner and goes, I'm like, dude, you're flooding it. You're flooding it. No, no, stop.
No, he's just doing the Jeff Goldblum laugh.
You dig up dinosaur bones?
You interested in this dinosaur bone? No, I wish he was doing that. I mean, that would have been the best joke they could have done, because this movie was 1 year after Jurassic Park.
This movie was definitely rushed to finish when they were like, oh, Jurassic Park, people like dinosaurs now. Let's go. What kind of dinosaur can we do?
It's part of a little tiny mid-90s wave of these that include things like Carnosaur and Tammy and the T-Rex that are just sort of, oh my God, Jurassic Park is the most successful movie ever made. Let's make 15 more.
Oh, yeah.
So, but boy, is this ever... Well, I don't know. I've seen Tammy and the T-Rex as well. Those two are definitely the nadir.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so the two of them get assigned to be partners. Whoopi Goldberg's response is, I want to say, but he's a dinosaur 50,000 times? Is that right?
I would say says, but he's a dinosaur about as many times as Theodore wants a cookie.
Yeah, no, I'd say she says, but he's a dinosaur about as many times as there are stars in the sky.
In fact, she's still saying it to this very day.
Every time a baby smiles.
I need to do that. Every time a baby smiles, but he's a dinosaur.
Dinosaurs don't smile. Why am I turning it into Tom Hanks from A League of Their Own? There's nothing in the rule book that says dinosaurs can smile.
There's nothing in the rule book that says a dinosaur can't play
baseball.
Yes,
there is.
It says right here, no dinosaurs. Very weirdly specific.
No one's read this rule book. It's 3,000 pages long.
There is way more rules than you think.
This game is actually impossible to play if you follow all of these.
There are at least several pages that are contradictory within themselves.
Did you know that if you hit a triple, you technically stop on free parking and collect the sales tax from the previous round of rolls?
This game will never end.
Wait, which one of these umpires is supposed to be the banker? Baseball plus Monopoly, a game so lethally boring, it was originally considered a war crime.
So they get together.
And they go into a fucking Theodore Rex's stupid car.
He's got a giant, dumb car that...
It's like mostly roller coaster.
Yeah, like the seatbelt is a bar that comes down,
mm-hmm.
and just for one gag, has a passenger seat that can be raised?
Yeah, so if he's riding around with a human, because he, of course, sits quite high because he doesn't actually sit down and cannot, he has to drive his car standing, he can raise her up to his head level, which instead he hits the button to do so, and it bonks her into the ceiling. And we get some of that classic Whoopi Goldberg witticisms from this movie in the form of gets me down. And that is every Whoopi joke in this film, is her angrily stating simple things.
Oh, yeah. The amount of times where you're like, I'm not sure if this is a written joke or if Whoopi Goldberg is just very angry that she is on this set.
No, a lot of this appears with her wearing that outfit that they definitely had to talcum her into, that she is visibly distraught, irritated, and working to get through the scenes.
Like, there are times where she's talking to, like, Teddy's like, can you just move your tail out of the way? And I'm like, I don't know if that was written into the script or if she was talking to the actor in the suit and was just pissed off.
I'd say half her dialogue with him is her giving him instructions about how to move without bumping into things, because she's literally talking to the actor in the suit.
Yeah.
There's a part where the two of them have to get into a Jeep to go somewhere, and she's like, okay, if you could just, all right, step up there. All right, I'm going to come in around on this side.
All right, move your butt to the left.
Okay, one step. Okay, I'm going to hold on here. There we go. All right, okay, we can go. And it's like, there's no way that was dialogue. That is literally just Whoopi trying to push through the scene.
And they kept it in the movie because there is nothing good in this movie, so why not?
I mean, she is about as visibly upset as Blade is in Blade or Trinity. Wesley Snipes in Blade Trinity, where he like refuses to open his eyes for scenes
enough,
and stuff.
Yeah, oddly enough, Whoopi Goldberg never opens her eyes in this movie.
They just CGI'd it in.
They didn't even bother to CGI it. She's walking around eyes closed.
If Patton Oswalt had been in the cast of this movie, and I'm not saying he isn't, then he would have already done several really good comedy routines about how mad she was.
And I'm not saying that he wasn't that horny dinosaur that just went...
It's a pretty good cast. Yeah. I would have accepted it. He also
Patton Oswalt as a horny dinosaur is perfect casting.
Yeah, it's the only better Patton Oswalt casting is MODOK.
Yeah.
It's the best casting ever, and anyone who thinks anyone else should be MODOK is wrong, and fight me.
Fight me in real life. Meet me outside in 20 minutes if you want an ass whooping.
Uh-huh, because Patton Oswalt is MODOK, and it's the best. I just shut up. I know he was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Stop. Just stop. No one gives a fuck about Agent Billy through Zilly Koenig or whatever the fuck. They're shit. He should be MODOK.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, so they go on a dumb ride in their dumb car to
Dumbsville.
To the Natural History Museum, where they are performing an autopsy on the dinosaur that was killed.
Yeah, because that's where you send your dinosaur for an autopsy, is the Natural History Museum.
Because they haven't put up facilities yet for dinosaur doctors or whatever. I guess dinosaurs, he literally is in the first generation of clone dinosaurs.
No, he is literally the first dinosaur to die. Not just be killed, but just dead.
Yes.
So they have never dealt with this.
So they get there, and everyone is stymied by the fact that this dinosaur is dead. No one knows how the hell it happened. They say an explosion went off in his face, but that's as close as they've been able to get. And then Teddy says, oh, well, would you please excuse me for a second? I need to solve this problem. And he starts going, and so on.
Yeah. You hurt yourself trying to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he starts making the noises of the guys from the Dark Crystal. He's just like, oh, and holding his hand over this dead guy.
And then the crystal cracked.
And eventually he's like, oh, I know what happened.
And he just
shoves his hand into that like dead dinosaur's face and pulls out part of a butterfly.
And it's like, oh, come on now. This dinosaur is currently getting an autopsy. You telling me they didn't check his mouth and nose when the first thing they say is, oh, an explosion went off in his face?
Yeah, an explosion went off in his face, but I've mostly just been eating for the past 3 hours. So.
I also dislike dinosaurs. Look, they cloned dinosaurs. It was really exciting for about the first year or so, and then everyone realized how shticky they are.
And then we just realized we had to incorporate them into society, because instead of cloning, you know, like 2 or 3, you cloned a society of them for some reason.
And for some reason, some borscht belt managed to get into their DNA.
And let me say, when they walk into the Natural History Museum, there are the bones of 4 reals actual-sized dinosaurs in there, and you're like, hold on, wait a minute. Let's pause on this. You can't have your dinosaurs dinosaurs be human-sized and then also show us that dinosaurs aren't that size.
Yes. Now, this is a great moment, by the way, when they walk in and they're passing their way through the museum, because for some reason, he also can connect mentally with the bones of these dinosaurs, can Theodore Rex, and he's like, oh, wow, I can feel that guy's energy, as he says, as they're passing a real T-Rex, and she's like, you have a connection with him? Well, not so much that they can talk to me, but I can kind of understand their feelings, and I'm like, all right, first of all, that's bullshit. Fossils contain no dinosaur. There's stones made in the shape of old dinosaur bones, but second, it's just bullshit because this is one of the two or three scenes in the film where Theodore Rex kind of evokes the emotional message of the film, where he's like, yeah, they're telling me I can do anything I want, and that's why I have to follow my dream and become a great detective.
Yeah, the dinosaurs of old, they inspire me to be what I can be. I'm like, no.
Detective, Commissioner, you're the one who taught me that I should follow my dreams, and that's why you should give me this case. It happens a lot where he says random inspirational things that have nothing to do with anything, and then just pushes forward in the movie.
Yeah.
God, what a fucking annoying scene. So they send off a tail print of the dead dinosaur via some sort of green glowing fax machine to determine who it was.
Yeah, and it turns out it's Oliver Rex.
Oliver Rex. Address of residence, prehistoric place.
Good.
Which I guess is the only place dinosaurs live.
Yeah, I don't know if they were like, hey, we started cloning dinosaurs and we just got really into it for a weekend and we've got like maybe 100. They really need a place to stay because we're not going to keep them here on our giant compound that can house animals. If you could build some tenements and maybe a nightclub for them and call the street prehistoric place, that'd be great. Anyway, bye, we're New Genesis.
Basically, we have an artificially constructed Toontown for dinosaurs to live in. It has one address because the next place they go when they have to go to prehistoric place to do investigation is a big old nightclub that is at prehistoric place.
Yeah, it's just the street. That's the only street.
Yep.
And that's what you get to live on.
And that's the scene where we get to watch Whoopi Goldberg get hit on by random dinosaurs. We get to meet the movie's one flaming gay dinosaur,
I guess.
That one's rough. Because this scene is where they just haul out all the shitty costumes they had to spare, just sort of have extras shake them in the background while a cacophony of "rrr, rrr" is played.
Yeah.
And they discover a couple of basic details, but most importantly, we get introduced to the dinosaur love interest of the film.
And we get the Jessica Rabbit of dinosaurs.
Yeah, except her name is,
Missy?
Missy?
Molly.
Molly. Molly Rex.
Yeah, Molly Rex.
Voiced by Carol Kane.
God damn it. I just feel bad for her.
That's a shining light in the film. To hear Carol Kane's voice at all, and I'm like, aw, Carol Kane, yay.
I mean, aw.
At least her face isn't in this.
Yeah.
And she, of course, because it's a bad movie, and for some reason, bad movies are always obsessed with Casablanca. She's a torch singer.
Yeah.
And not only that, but there's also several scenes where Teddy does Casablanca-style accents.
Yep.
This won't amount to a hill of beans in my town, yeah? And you're just like, why does every bad movie reference Casablanca?
All of them.
It's like 90% of the bad movies we watch has a Casablanca moment in it.
Yeah.
And I don't get why. Why don't they like any other good old movie?
Because it's the only one they know of. They don't actually like it. They've probably never even seen Casablanca.
They've just seen other bad movies that have Casablanca bits in them. It's Cargo Cult at this point.
Yeah, they're like, well, look, I'm making a shitty movie. I've got to reference Casablanca at some point.
It's a requirement. I absolutely have to. Like, you'd expect to maybe see a North by Northwest or a Vertigo reference or something at some point. Never happens. Always Casablanca.
Yep, that's it. Because otherwise you can't get your shitty director's license.
That's literally what it is. Would you like to be an Alan Smithy? You have to watch Casablanca with your eyes taped open. It's the Casablanca Vico technique.
The two of them
split
are gonna question her, and so what's her nuts? Coltrane is like, oh, I'm gonna go check on that dead guy. Why don't you go home? And Teddy drives his dumbass car and gets his car stripped out from under him
while
by
he's driving
Toad Men.
Yeah. Oh my god, that scene. He's just sort of waving at him and trying to get him loose. And for more than half of the whole scene, he thinks they're his friends because he's just the biggest fucking idiot ever. So he's just like, ha, oh no, little men are on my car. What do you guys need?
Hey, little man, what are you doing? That's dangerous.
Oh, watch out now. Oh no, you guys are hurting things. I don't think you mean to. Please stop. And by the end, when they're like, you know, filling the remnants of his car with shaving cream, he's like, I hate this. So eventually he calls for backup. Katie shows up and she's like, why didn't you just pull your gun? And he's like, I don't believe in violence.
That's right. I believe in peace. and I'm a vegetarian dinosaur, and that's the big thing. That's the message, I guess.
You know what happens when you don't believe in violence and don't carry your gun and you're a police officer?
Yeah, little trash golems take apart your car.
You
that's what happens.
You are fired! It's a requirement of the job.
That's why you have to turn in your gun and your badge.
That's what he did. He was like, oh, I'm going to preemptively turn in my gun and badge in case anyone fires me.
Just so you know, it makes it real easy to fire me if you want to.
And once again, let me reiterate, I'm terrible.
I'm bad at my job and everything else.
So anyway, she yells at him for a bit, realizes that he is an anti-violence vegetarian police T-Rex, and the next day, they meet at the police station to get a new car.
They need to get a new car and a new outfit for Teddy.
Yeah. So,
which, oh my god, this is...
It's just two shtick routines.
It's the worst scene in the movie for me, probably, bar none.
I don't know if it beats the interrogating the man in the bag scene.
I mean, that's also pretty bad, but honestly, Jesus.
So, okay, they have to do a couple different things at the police station. They also need to figure out what was going on with that chunk of butterfly they found in the dead dinosaur. But first, they need to requisition a new car for Teddy, which should be obvious, because he's a police officer, so getting a new car when his car gets blown up in the line of duty is like, yeah, of course they're gonna give him one, that's how police work. It's not like if you're a school bus driver and your bus gets blown up, you have to go through a humiliating parade of shit to get your next bus. They need you to drive.
Yeah.
But
like, hey, I am on a very large and important case because this is the first ever dinocide. You think you might give me some resources, but no. The guy who's like handing out cars goes, well, I don't know.
So what he does is he's like, well, hang on, let me try my terrifying routine. He's like, give me that car, I'll bite your head. Arr! And then for some reason, Whoopi slides right into Nice Cop, and she's like, hey, we talked about that. We said you weren't going to bite people, because she hates this movie and doesn't want to be a part of it.
Yep.
and then they back off for a second and come back in with Teddy trying out 6 different action movie accents. So if you would like to hear a dinosaur do Arnold...
No, he doesn't do the action movie stuff until they're going to go to the man in the bag.
Oh, okay, fair enough. What they do at this point, then, is they go off to get him a new outfit.
The world that this takes place in is confusing as fuck. I don't understand what's going on, because they go down into, like, the basement of the police precinct, and Teddy stands on what looks like a Star Trek teleporter, and a policewoman hits buttons and, like, teleports clothes onto him?
Now, we don't know if this works on non-dinosaurs, or if their dinosaurs can get dressed any other way, but basically, he just stands there, and she puts him into stereotypical haha outfits.
Yeah, like, he goes down, he's like, hey, I need a new outfit, one that actually looks like I'm a police officer instead of just like some very weird comedian, because I'm in like a fucking baggy Cosby sweater and slacks.
Big ol' orange hoodie on top. He looks like if a dinosaur was a character in Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, and for some reason, the fucking lady in charge of this not only is going to fuck with him by being like, oh, the first button I hit is you get that like horn to helm opera lady costume. And of course, every time she puts him in a different costume, he has to then immediately be like, oh, this isn't what I wanted.
Yeah, he's doing shtick, and we can't tell if the machine makes him do shtick.
I'm like, I don't know if this machine has zapped you into an opera singer as well as the clothes, or if you're so into the shtick that you are unwilling to go, hey, stop it, put me in police clothes.
No, I think it's literally that comedy is so ingrained in his DNA, like shitty hacky comedy, that he can't not do it.
Oh yeah,
he like hates himself for it while he's doing it, where he's just like, kill the rabbit. I fucking hate my kill the rabbit. Just could you just teleport on clothes that make me dead?
I mean, of course, the film has to have him in a giant mustache and sombrero. And,
oh, yeah, and he's like, oh, no, I do not like these.
Thank you, movie, for the racist Mexican joke. Good job, movie. You did it.
Yep. And then, let's see, what else does he do?
We get Scottish. We get...
Yeah, I think he does Jamaican at one point.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's just a cavalcade of crap.
It was basically like the actor was like, hey, man, let me do some accents. I got some shit I'm working on. Let me just do whatever. And they went, okay, sure, we'll put stupid clothes on your dumb dino.
Look, the nice thing about putting clothes on this dino is we can't see him pulling his eyes back when he does a stereotypical Chinese one.
My other question for this is, in addition to, all right, we live in a world where you can teleport clothes onto people, and why aren't we using this technology for anything else, is why does the police machine for new uniforms have the option of fucking opera singer in it?
And it's like the first button. Yeah, what's going on there?
Like, how do I go to my quick dial and the first three options are like opera singer, racist Mexican outfit, and racist Jamaican outfit?
Hey, we didn't establish, like, for sure that this isn't set in some future Gotham City where all the villains are basically like opera themed and stuff.
Then why would you want to put someone in that in the police force?
Undercover work.
But if you go in as the fat lady who sings, then the fat lady, who is obviously the name of the criminal who is opera themed,
yeah,
is gonna murder you.
Well, I didn't say they were good cops. That's why there's always a Batman.
There's always a Batman.
Yeah, because otherwise you got to deal with all these bumbling opera cops.
These goddamn bumbling opera cops.
That's your problem, John. The goddamn bumbling opera cops. But no, eventually they put him in the outfit that is perfect for what he needs, which is indistinguishable from what he got on the platform in the first place.
Yeah, his baggy sweater turns into a tighter sweater, and instead of just being like a big orange mess of yarn, it looks like a Cosby sweater.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that like blue and red and yellow pattern thing going.
Mm-hmm. Orange hoodie still.
Still the orange hoodie, still blue pants, still sneakers. It is the literal exact same outfit. They just made his get a better sweater?
It's the get a better sweater button. It's right there next to Opera Copper.
Ah, yeah. The get a better sweater button, now at Nordstrom's.
So, God damn it. And I don't understand why they didn't put him in a police uniform.
Yep. Went through all of this with the knowledge that, yes, we can put him in weird, stupid outfits, but not like a cop's outfit? Like, that's not one of the buttons in the police station machine that gives you new clothes.
But anyway, while he's begging and pleading with this lady to stop pressing random clown buttons, Whoopi Goldberg is off in another room talking with a scientist who is on a giant mobile chair thing, who's like, hey, this butterfly is an explosive flying robo-butterfly. There's only one man who could build these. We call him the Toy Maker. Anyway, here's his address.
Yeah, okay. Why do you know where the Toy Maker is? A guy who makes weird weapons and I think threatens the Flash and Superman?
He's half Doll Man,
half Toy Maker.
Yeah, Doll Maker, half Toy Man.
Yeah.
Okay, but so they go to his fucking building, and this is this is my least favorite thing that fucking happens in this. Oh, they do get a new car. It's a garbage truck, and Teddy has to stand in the garbage.
Oh. They didn't even fucking clean the garbage out of the garbage truck.
No, all they really did was saw out the front part of the garbage container so that he can talk to Whoopi Goldberg.
Yep.
Which is funny because that means she's also sloshing in garbage. But yeah, they drive this thing to...
Well, of course she's sloshing in garbage. She is in Theodore Rex.
It's true. They drive this thing to the Toy Maker's building where they have to interrogate the guy who's watching the front desk, a 6-foot-high puppet of a gangster hiding in a doctor bag.
If you've ever seen the old Puppet Master horror films, it is basically like, take one of those puppets, specifically the strongman puppet, and make him do horrible shtick, and that's what this scene is.
Yeah, he's just a little guy in a bag, and he does a whole, nah, see, accent, and...
But the worst is they're like, hey, who are you? I'm the guy in the bag. All right, what do you do? I'm in the bag.
Yeah.
God,
we want to see the Toy Maker. The Toy Maker don't see nobody, no how.
Anyway, I'm in a bag.
And then, this is my favorite part, Whoopi Goldberg threatens to climb into the bag and snatch him to death. And that's the actual line.
I'm gonna snatch you to death. Thanks, Whoopi. Thanks.
What is she talking about? Is she planning to grab him and think? And does she think that will kill him? Or is she planning to somehow vaginally murder this guy?
Yeah, I'm gonna get you all up in my guts.
Dance around in there. I don't understand that, but that's a direct line from the film. And at one point he's like, well, if you won't deal with me, then you'll deal with the worm. And then a little puppet worm shows up, like a little fuzzy worm puppet, and they're scared of it, so they run from it, and then it turns into a butterfly. I don't even know.
It's a caterpillar that turns into a butterfly.
At this point, the movie makes zero sense. They're talking to puppets. They're just sort of, they're in a weird, dirty building talking to two puppets.
Yeah. The movie kind of goes off the rails. It's just like, before, it was a shitty buddy cop film that couldn't quite decide if it wanted to be a noir detective thing, or if it wanted to be a comedy buddy cop, or if it wanted to be Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
And then now it's decided, nope, we're going to be a weird puppet film. And
no, they've just run out of money, and this is what they can do. They're like, we need this scene to happen. And then they finally, they make their way past the fucking two puppets and encounter the toy maker, who is... he looks just like the guy who played Kano in the Mortal Kombat movies. I'm sorry, not Kano. The guy, Shang Tsung.
Okay.
Yeah, he looks like Shang Tsung. He might even be the guy who played Shang Tsung. I don't know.
I was going to say, he doesn't look like the guy who played Kano. He's not sitting there like, oi, I'm Australian.
No, I just forgot which Mortal Kombat character I was trying
to
describe.
I'm going to make you smile.
He looks like the guy who played.
From ear to ear.
Get over here.
Mortal Kombat, the first movie, is a fucking gem.
I mean, it might be the best video game movie.
Probably. I mean, it's up there with Silent Hill.
I was going to say, some of the horror movie adaptations are actually pretty good. And even then, you got to say some of, because you're talking Silent Hill.
Oh, well, your first Resident Evil, first Resident Evil, Silent Hill.
Yeah, because you got to be careful not to include Alone in the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
The fucking Tara Reid vehicle of your nightmares.
None of the sequels, because all of the Resident Evil sequels are terrible.
Well, they have nothing to do with the video games anymore.
The Silent Hill sequel is... so amazingly bad.
Yeah. So Mortal Kombat 1, that might be the greatest video game movie.
And that's what we've decided on. All right. We're good.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
We've wrapped it up.
That's perfect timing. We're all set here. Now they meet this freaking Japanese guy that makes model super butterflies and bluff their way into getting him to sit down at his table by saying that they're cops who want better cop guns.
Yeah, that's their whole plan.
Their whole plan. He's like, what are you doing here? You're cops. And they're like, we want bigger guns. And he's like, why would cops want bigger guns? And they're like, because we like big guns. And he's like, all right, we'll come back here and take a look at the guns. So they walk back there. They get back. He sits down, starts showing them guns to look at. And they go, we accuse you of murder. And he's like, oh, well, now I'm going to escape then. He's like, what plan was this? You bluffed your way to getting him to walk back 5 feet behind his desk?
I mean, I can understand if you're like, oh, we wanted to get him to like put his guard down and maybe sit down somewhere, and then I was going to grab him or something.
Obviously, his desk is his seat of power. Get him while he's standing.
His seat of power.
Yeah, he'll press the button that does a thing. He's a weird inventor.
Yeah, that's his whole point.
Yeah, but anyway, what happens is he immediately falls into a platform hole in the desk while laughing at them, and a little wind-up beetle starts walking around and beeping, and our heroes back away from it one tiny shuffly step at a time, specifically because walking backwards in that T-Rex puppet has got to be impossible.
Yeah.
And then the whole building blows up, and we get a couple of shtick moments. Notably, the bag containing the guy in the bag pops open. The guy in the bag sticks his head out and says, I ain't cleaning this up, yuck, yuck, and then goes back in the bag.
Yeah, good. I'm glad we checked in with guy in the bag.
A 6-inch tall puppet again. And also, the toy maker escapes and is alive, but we'll never see him again, so who gives a fuck?
Oh, no, we do, because they have to question him.
Oh,
they tie him to a table.
That's
and are
right.
Like, tell me what's going on.
I'm sorry, I completely blanked out because of the guy in the bag bit, but he pops up and goes, ha-ha, I escaped. And then, you know, Teddy's tail gets him.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And they tie him to a pole, and they fart on him and breathe on him and fart on him until he says what he wants.
And then Teddy's like, I'm going to bite your head off.
I'm going to bite you. And he's like, I don't care about that. And he's like,
that's what gets him.
Oh, is it? I thought it was the fart.
No.
Okay.
He does the breath, and that doesn't matter.
I thought it was Whoopi snatching him. Am I wrong? I thought she snatched him until he agreed to talk.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, so, all right. But he tells him who the bad guy is, and of course it's Whispery Frenchman and his British hench helper, who also throughout the course of the movie have been shown in limos going like, the problem, she is getting the worse. I'll take care of it. Indeed you shall. And then they threaten their lower henchmen.
Yeah. The henchmen have been supposed to be like following these two around and doing stuff, but mostly nothing happens.
No,
and
just,
it doesn't matter.
They just bumble around. But we should probably jump to the final confrontation. First, we have to introduce the fact that their characters have friends. Carol Kane's Molly Rex has started sort of dating Teddy Rex, which is the worst thing. Two dinosaurs dating is absolutely the worst.
Well, getting entire scenes where it's just two people in awkward, shitty costumes trying to, like, dance with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nope, this is terrible.
And then there's a little boy who is Whoopi Goldberg's, like, family friend or something.
It's a friend that he is trying to set her up with his dad.
Yes. So, and we even go to, he's playing street hockey at one point, and they go out to meet him there, and Teddy shows off his amazing hockey playing ability, which is to shoot three balls into the goal with his tail at once.
Yep.
But anyway, those two characters who have been introduced are kidnapped.
Yeah, I don't understand why they got kidnapped.
Leverage?
Yeah, you'd think that.
But not kidnapping them would have kept the cops off your property.
Exactly.
Because they only came there to get the people you kidnapped. kidnapped.
Because they hear, like, oh, something's going on with, like, these guys over at, like, New Genesis. And then the people there are like, hey, we took your friends. We got them.
Yeah, stay out of here.
I'm like, you just told them that you have the people they like, that's going to send them over there. What the fuck is... No one has a plan.
So at this point, they decide to raid Bud Cort's building. And they do that. They raid Spinner's warehouse, where they capture him and force him to fly them to New Genesis in an ultralight glider straight out of Howard the Duck, which is clearly very heavily overloaded with both a T-Rex and a Whoopi Goldberg on it.
Yep.
But it does its stupid crash scene, and now we have our big confrontation with the villains.
Yeah, and that's where the villain tells them his plan, so we didn't need the opening crawl to tell us what it was.
But this scene's great because they all crash into the building. The villain's like, what the fuck are you doing here, Bud Cort? And he's like, well, it's not my fault, sir. They forced me to bring them here. And they kill him, and then they're like, and lock those two up.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're willing to kill?
Like, we know that you want to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
We know that you don't want them to interfere with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You have a gun trained on them right now. And yet you're like, oh, yeah, go take that cop with bio enhancements that's obviously going to want to stop what we're doing and, I don't know, put her in a cage or something.
Give her the tour.
Yeah, just walk her around for a bit.
And they're like in the middle of doing the plan. They're like, all right, we're going to launch the missile today that puts the world into an ice age. And it turns out they actually were kidnapping Molly Rex because she was the lady T-Rex clone. And the reason that they don't want to kill Teddy Rex is because he's going to be the boy T-Rex clone.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we'll have a pair of mated Rexes.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg, though, they're just giving her the tour before they kill her off.
It's very weird, and she, of course, immediately disables the person who was trying to put her into the fucking cage.
Yeah. Let's see. Teddy gets into a brief fight with Drusilla, but he just sort of bonks her into a room and turns on the freezing machine, so she just gets frozen in there.
Yeah.
And he lets Carol Kane out, and the two of them have a big old hug scene where they're like, yay, we're rescued! And it was like, no, remember the world's still going to go into an ice age, and anyone who's not frozen in those rooms is going
to
die?
Yeah, you remember how he's shooting a missile to make the Earth get fucked up? You should probably should have just gone into the room, man.
And in my favorite example of what do we have on set, the little boy who was a friend of Whoopi Goldberg is locked in a cage where he befriends a chimp.
Yeah, there's a chimp in there for some reason.
It doesn't have anything to do with the film, although it does escape with them at the end. It's just some chimp he finds.
Yeah, I mean, it's not around at the end of the movie, so it was just sort of like, hey guys, someone left a chimp here on set. I guess we should use it.
Let's just, it's cinema verite, guys.
Guys,
if there's a chimp on the scene, there's a chimp in the movie.
So, yeah, there is the fight against, like, our final bad guys, the main weird razor blade ear dude and Whisper Frenchman, takes way too long.
It's got something to do with throwing grappling hooks at cars and...
Oh, yeah.
It's just a bunch of shit.
Because they like, chase after them and they shoot at them in the room where, like, all the cryo-freezer things are, and that's when...
Oh, God, that
Whoopi
scene.
Whoopi gets disabled.
She gets disabled, and then also Teddy gets hit with a bullet, but it doesn't seem to do anything to him because he's a T-Rex, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna stop them while you recover. Give me your gun. And she has, I shit you not, a 15 fucking minute speech where she explains why he shouldn't use a gun. And he was right all along.
No, Teddy, don't use a gun. You need to do this your way, without violence. You need to do things without guns, because guns are bad and you're good.
Instead of using your gun, you should use your head. Use your heart, Teddy. Use the heart that's in your head instead of a gun. Shoot your head hard at the bad guys out of the hand that is the barrel of the gun that is your head heart.
Use your brain meats to shoot thought bullets into them.
And even he's like, this is dumb. But then she's like, but don't worry, because this means you can follow your dreams. And he's like, my dreams? That's the thing I keep mentioning.
Oh, hey, that's a thing that I've said.
Yeah. So they stop the bad guys. Whatever.
Yeah.
And then we cut to a scene at the end of the movie where Teddy's being inducted as a real life police detective.
Yeah, he gets a medal from the commissioner and everything.
Yeah, and all our favorite characters are there. Oh, and New Genesis blew up because, like, a satellite fell on it or something. I don't, who cares?
And then it blew up somehow. Yeah.
And then he's like, well, now that I'm a detective with a medal, I get to pick my own partner, Whoopi Goldberg. Say, what are you doing for the next 20 years? And she's like, oh, Star Trek The Next Generation movie appearances and,
you know,
comedy stand-ups. But I'm going to become a critically... Actually, I'm going to EGOT. That's what's going to happen. Oh, wait, you mean I'm going to be your partner? Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, sure, that sounds right.
That sounds right, yeah. And then we get credits, and the credits begin with the prophetic phrase delivered across the screen in large Jurassic font, see ya.
See ya. That's the end of the movie. It's just stupid font words, see ya.
See ya. The
Thanks.
End.
Thanks. Okay. What a way to end your dumb bullshit movie.
We made it, the movie.
Oh. Yay. So
We had 90 minutes of content. 80 if you don't count the puppet stuff.
That's Theodore Rex. Jeff, mm-hmm. Jeff, I'm going to ask you a question right now.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
And I want you to be ready for it.
And I want you to remember that I'm half-assing this as hard as I can.
Oh, I know.
Uh-huh.
I think we all know that.
Yeah, although I've had some good lines. Let's be clear here.
Let's be clear.
The snatching stuff, that was Jeff at his height.
The better sweater button, come on now.
Yeah, that was good shit. So even when I'm half-assing it, something good comes out. So by all means, hit me with your question. Maybe I've got gold in the tube.
Jeff, what was your favorite thing in Theodore Rex?
Oh, it's definitely the dinosaur funeral scene that we didn't actually get a chance to talk about. It's like the weird, this is the first generation of dinosaurs. Every dinosaur that of this new generation that's alive is still alive, but they have an extraordinarily complicated funereal ritual that they all already know about.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're going to liquefy the dinosaur and turn them into fertilizer for these flowers, and then you get a flower, and it's like he's still with you in this flower that will definitely now die.
And there's like a Styracosaur priest that has the exact voice of the narrator, and he's just like, hello, Teddy. The important thing is that I am your father. But and if you build it, they will come. But he seems to have all these funereal rites down already. Like, even though, again, no dinosaur has ever died before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know when they got together and were like, oh yes, we as a species are going to now decide what to happen when one of us eventually dies.
The best part is that Whoopi keeps trying to ask questions about it. They keep shushing her. They're like, shh, come on now, this is a funeral. Show some respect. This is the ancient dinosaur way. She's like, no, there's no way that's true. Shh. Funeral. So I liked that part because it was completely nonsensical.
Good.
So what would you say is your favorite part of the film?
I gotta say my favorite part of the film is... Ooh, I kind of want to go with just related to that, the horny dinosaur. Horny, human-loving dinosaur is probably the best character that we never followed up
with. They mentioned the specific fetish that he has, is which he's into soft skins.
Yeah, because that's what humans are.
Yeah, humans are soft skins, not scale skins. And he's got a penchant for that human booty.
Yeah, he loves humans.
And he expresses it the only way he knows how, by making weird, uncomfortable grunts like that one kid on the bus that no one wants to sit near.
Yeah, he is definitely sounding like an engine that just won't turn over, and he's sitting there googling eyes at you.
He's definitely the guy on the Greyhound that is clearly invisibly masturbating, but no one is going to say anything about it.
Yes, that's what this dinosaur is.
Not even in the bathroom. And if you ask him why he's not in the bathroom, he just goes, occupado. Thanks for asking. That helped.
Yeah.
So I can see that. Masturbating dino, sure.
Yeah, that weird horny dino. Mm-hmm. That's what I like. That's what I like in my movies.
Yeah, you can go ahead and ask me the actual hard question.
All right, what's the worst thing in there?
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Pick one.
John, it was the tone of this book.
No, you pick a scene.
Mm.
You pick one thing from this movie that you hated the most.
Costume shtick.
One scene.
No, okay, I'm going to leave you the costume robot machine shtick.
Okay.
For me, it's definitely the nonsense that's going on with the toy maker and the man in the bag. I know that we already talked about it, but it's like, does this movie need a scene where someone built a tiny Muppet that speaks like a gangster and won't let people into a building to see a guy who wants to sell them guns?
Yeah.
Like, this dude's a businessman. And this guy's like, no, you can't see him. Well, why not? Because I'm the man in the bag, see? And I'm like, no, this doesn't work. None of this works. None of this makes any sense or means anything. What is going on?
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like the movie is very, very confused on what it wants to be, as I mentioned before.
Sure.
But I also don't know who this movie is for.
No.
Like, are you trying to aim this at children? Are you trying to aim this at adults?
I would say so, because it's got a lot of fart jokes in it. And also, they never say the word fart, because Teddy is very sensitive like that. He says words like butt trumpet.
Yes, indeed.
No, Officer Coltrane, I didn't butt trumpet.
Ugh. Yeah, it... Like, I understand the whole puppet scene would be okay if they had established the world better as being so high-tech that, like, oh yeah, I just have robots that do everything, but this guy's weird and eccentric such that his robots look like weird toys.
Yeah, it is just nonsense. But, John, I mean, really, what I want to hear here is, what is your least favorite thing in this movie?
I mean, it's that costume scene where they fucking put him in all of the different costumes and he gets to
just
do the worst fucking accents ever.
Hack out some basically racist material.
Yeah, there's, like... And the worst part is, well, the racism. But the second worst part is...
probably the sexism. And then the third worst part is...
the fact that he's bad at the voices.
Yes. No, that's particularly bad. This is like your uncle doing an accent.
Oh, yeah. And it's like someone who's never heard a Jamaican accent trying to do a Jamaican accent. He's like, oh, boy, I like the reggae music. And you're like, what? You sound like the fucking Swedish chef. What the shit is this?
Hurdy-gurdy, bort-bort, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up.
Oh, down by the beach.
Take the steel drum to the blunderbursty derridum.
What is... what the fuck is this?
Her Jamaican jerky chicky chicky.
Yeah, it's so awful.
It makes no sense at all.
He's bad. The scene is bad. It was a bad idea to begin with. And it just gives me more questions about this universe.
Well, the fact that
they never gets answered.
They end the scene with, why did we do that 5 minutes of like Highlander and Jamaican and Mexican shtick? Is, oh, we needed to change this one character's shirt.
Yeah. Oh, we needed to put him in a different sweater. Good. I'm glad we went through all of that.
Fuck's sake. There you have it, though.
Yeah. So we're going to give this a rating 0 to 5 for each of us. Gives it the rating out of 10. Jeff?
One.
It's the loneliest number.
One is the loneliest number, but the problem is that 2 is also a lonely number, and that's what it'll get if you also give it a 1.
Yeah, well, that'll be the loneliest number since the number 1.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 0.5 because I hated this.
All right. Cool.
I really hated this. This made me mad most. I was almost as mad as Whoopi Goldberg was visibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were basically talking to the movie the same way Whoopi Goldberg was.
And I've done a little bit of research into this movie and seen that the truth is, we're not wrong. We could tell from looking into it, but after we watched it, I went and looked it up. Turns out Whoopi Goldberg tried desperately to get out of making this. She was
Excellent.
Contractually forced to make this movie once she realized what it was and that there was no budget and the people she thought were had been promised to be involved were not. She tried to get out and she couldn't. So she is exactly as angry as she looks.
Excellent.
Yeah. So
you gotta love those.
Yeah. So how about you?
I'll give it a 1. I mean, it's a movie.
Eh, I don't know if it's that. I mean, just because something is 90 minutes of footage doesn't mean it's a movie.
I mean, it's real bad, but it's a 1 for me.
All right, sure. So that gives it a 1.5.
1.5 out of 10 for good old Theodore Rex.
Let's close the book on this fucking thing. Dude, it's completely on YouTube if you would like to see it, folks. 100% on YouTube.
Please don't.
Don't watch it. Stay away. Boring.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. We have been Movie Mastery. We will, of course, be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. And if you want to suggest movies for us to watch, you can go to r/System Mastery on Reddit. We've got our big thread there for all of the movie suggestions. And then if you also want, you can go onto our SystemMasteryPodcast.com website, go to the Movie Mastery tab, and we've got the poll for what to watch every month up there. Man, this month we haven't done it yet, but it is a weird fight between two awful-looking movies.
Yeah, you got Gringos, whatever it is.
Yeah, Gringo.
Which, for all the world, looks like a movie that came out in, like, 1998 to 2001.
Oh, yeah, it definitely looks like the Mexican version of Go.
Yeah, or the Mexican version of The Mexican, or the Mexican version of The Way of the Gun, any one of those, or Very Bad Things.
Yeah.
One of those black comedies that, you know, everyone's dark and edgy, and they're playing a whole... Jay Moore is in it,
We just keep getting into chase scenes for some reason.
Yeah, it's a million chase scenes, and there's one older guy who plays a surprisingly erudite mafia don. In this case, I'm just describing Suicide Kings.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. And then the other one is Sherlock Gnome, which stars Johnny Depp, so we don't want to watch it.
Yeah, I don't want to watch either of those movies, but those are the two that are duking it out right now.
Uh-huh.
So in 2 weeks, we're going to be reviewing one of those.
Uh-huh.
So you can go ahead to the website and vote for that. And other than that, if you like what we do here, you want to support us, we do have a Patreon over at patreon.com/System Mastery. You can go ahead, support us however you want. If you listen to our other shows, System Mastery, Expounded Universe, we do have bonus content for that at the $1 and $2 levels.
Yeah, you can get as many as 6 bonus podcasts a month. It's an amazing way to hear yet more of our dumb, hacky comedy.
Yeah, we do.
Folks,
we
take
too
my
much
wife.
Content.
Take my wife, please.
Take my wife.
Yeah. Folks, I just flew in from Seattle.
And boy, is that plane deplaning.
And boy, am I one of those people who stands up the instant the plane touches down and then just stands there awkwardly like a dickhead.
I'm in the back of the plane. Why am I even doing this?
I'm doing this so I can make everyone around me get antsy, thinking that I'm going to do some weird thing to try to get ahead of stuff.
Yeah, everyone around me is like, well, now I have to stand up so he doesn't try to go running down the middle of this plane.
Oh, now I have a moral obligation to stop the dickhead. That's what the lady said when she was giving the explanation about how to fly in the plane at the beginning of the flight. Folks,
right,
this
everyone.
Is how the seatbelt connects. If some dickhead does an idiot plane thing, it's your job as a person sitting near him to stop him, to stop everyone else from getting the squicks.
So yeah, go ahead, support us there. It lets us keep doing what we're doing, renting movies like Theodore Rex or going into theaters to see Sherlock Gnomes, just the worst possible imaginable punishment, and you can pay so that we keep doing it.
Yeah, it's the only way you'll force us.
Yep, but other than that, like I said, we will be back in a couple weeks with another episode, but until then, you have a good one.